Blog Talk Radio.
Once you have the collapse of the mythical or the mythless condition and the loss of the sense that the world is sacred moment to moment, you have the possibility of exploiting everything and everyone without the instinct for the dignity of things, the dignity of animals, and the dignity of people. And you have the condition I think we're in now, where nothing is sacred.
Oculus Radio is a platform for all souls to free their minds of the constraints that society has placed upon them. We are here to uplift and to raise each other in consciousness and to celebrate our humanity. We seek to find voices deep within the abyss who have been waiting for that moment in time when they know their words will heal those who seek true fulfillment and balance. Where life experience has become the generator of all the gnosis. We acknowledge the divine feminine and wish to address the imbalance that has been perpetrated throughout the historic record. We seek to rejuvenate an old wisdom which has been eradicated from our divine scripts. We call to the mystic shaman, poets, artists, and prophetic vagabonds of our counterculture to come out of seclusion and join with us to co-create with our divine planet a new pleasure, an amorous journey into the realm of unlimited potential. We will be introducing some odd geniuses that are indeed in the right place at the right time. We are a collection of souls who came together with the passion to elevate our consciousness, so we may use this unique time we are in to create something beautiful and fulfilling into the next stage of humanity. This is Oculus Radio.
Good evening, everybody. I'd just like to welcome you to Oculus Radio tonight. Tonight we have a special guest, John Lamb Lash. He's a comparative mythologist and an author of a numerous amount of books, including one that rings very special to me, which is Not in His Image. This is just going to be an informal talk about John's work and what John's doing. He has a number of projects on the go at the moment, some very important projects, including mapping out the process and the universal process that we're in at the moment. He has been very involved in bringing the whole archontic or the archon sort of word into the public arena, and I think by now a lot of people are becoming aware of what and other influences that are basically manipulating society. And how are you, John?
I'm fine, thank you.
Thanks. I'd just like to welcome everybody else in. We have Lisa M. Harrison. How are you, Lisa?
I'm good, thanks, Dave. How are you?
Very well, thanks. Bob Wright, how are you, Bob?
I'm doing pretty good, David. Glad to be here. Welcome everybody to the show.
Well, welcome to you, too. And Brian, how are you, Brian?
I'm doing well, thank you. How's everyone?
Everyone's good. And welcome to everybody in the chat room. And Bevan and Tommy, how are you? And Octavia? Oh, Octavia's gone. Octavia's just going to sit and do the panel for me. So,
Good, David. You're pretty good. I'm glad to be here.
That's good, Bevan. So, John, you know, we're a very special time on the planet, and we're basically making a universal connection. After many, many years of being isolated in the wilderness of the galaxy, would you say that?
Were you speaking of the planet Earth itself?
Yes. Well, that the Sophianic consciousness within the planet has been, would you say, cut off from the universal or the galactic core a few centuries?
Oh, much longer than that.
Mm.
I mean, if we regard the Gnostic sacred myth of the Gnostics, which was taught in the mystery schools, it tells us some interesting things about the condition of our planet, which personally I don't find anywhere else. I think those of you in the group today may have recognized something that I often say, yet I wonder if people really get it, because it's kind of a staggering statement, but it's also just a plain piece of fact. And that is that of all the stories and myths and interpretations and narratives and theories that the human species has created over time, there is, to my knowledge, only one coherent narrative, that is to say a myth in the positive sense of the term, not a myth as a fiction or a lie, but a myth as a true story of power. There is only one myth that actually describes the origin of the human race and the planet itself, and it's kind of an autobiography of the planet, a biography. And according to this myth, the planet we inhabit is a living being, and this being pre-existed the material body of the planet. That's something that you want to think about for a moment. The being, Sophia, as the Gnostics called this divinity, pre-existed. It had a cosmic form pre-existent to turning into the material body of the planet. And so it has a story that precedes the appearance of the Earth. That story, as you just alluded, does go back to the galactic center. This is not some mysterious place in hyperspace or in some other dimension. It's the actual physical center of the four-arm galaxy we inhabit. So as the story goes, the divine Sophia, who turned into the Earth and now embodies the planet we're living on, did originate from the galactic center. And due to the bizarre circumstances under which she turned into the planet Earth, in a sense, lost contact with the other divine powers in the galactic core, which are called aeons in Gnostic teaching. So there you have, in, I guess, 3 or 4 minutes, a really full-blown cosmological narrative. In some respects, it appears almost like a science fiction story. It is, as far as I know, the only complete and coherent narrative we have that describes the situation of our planet. And according to this narrative, the divine Sophia would be at this very moment in time waking up in a particular way to the situation on the planet, waking up to the danger that humanity is facing. She considers us to be part of a divine experiment, waking up to the problems in that experiment, and at the same time, currently, as a matter of fact, in this year 2012, reconnecting in the most significant way with those divine forces at the galactic center. So that's my story in a nutshell. That's the story that I use now to teach the meaning of the living planet, Gaia Sophia.
John, I have a question.
Sure.
The times that we're living in right now, you're one of the few people, you know, a lot of people have been talking about the Mayan culture and the Mayan prophecies in 2012. We noticed that there's a lot of changes going on. There's been a lot of saber rattling, I think, amongst the nations. But you kind of have a happy ending to the story, or am I wrong? Are things going to get better? And I think this is one of the big questions that a lot of people have on their mind, because, you know, we've come through this long paradigm, and I do believe that it is beginning to crumble. I do see signs that, you know, people are awakening everywhere. And they're starting to feel something is happening. But there's always, you know, people, you know, are being fed a lot of information, a lot of disinformation. I think there's more disinformation than actual true, you know, reliable information that you could say this is, you could take this to the bank. So a lot of people are getting a lot of different mixed signals and ideas about what it is we're moving into and where it is that the planet is going. Or is that something that we have to decide yet? What do you take? What is the Gnostic view about our future and where we're going and the times that we're living in?
Well, that's a lot of questions rolled into one. I try to focus the answer, maybe give it, answer it in two ways. One way would be sort of the existential direct answer, and the second answer would be more related to the cosmic and Gnostic answer, because the Gnostics, there is an answer to your question from the Gnostic viewpoint, and it's quite a unique answer. In fact, it's absolutely unique and extraordinary. But first, you know, existentially speaking, I don't know if it's going to get better or not. Humanity is in an extremely dangerous situation as we speak today, as we're sitting here having this conversation. The fate of the human species pretty much hangs by a thread, and I don't know if it's going to work out well or not. The only thing that I'm certain of is that if the psychopaths who are endangering a life for other people on this planet are not stopped lethally, then I don't see how anything can get better. So I, for one, personally, for what it's worth, don't think that some kind of massive spiritual awakening of consciousness would be enough to get us back on a course of sanity, mutual aid, compassion, and sustainability. I don't think so. I think that there's a war going on in this planet. The planet is at war. And the war is not with external powers or archons or other ET civilizations who want to invade us and all that unspeculated garbage, the ungrounded speculation and confusion and disinformation. The war is as plain as day. It's written all over daily events. The war is between those members of the human race who just want to get along together and thrive and enjoy the miracle of being alive, and the psychopathic control freaks who want to deceive and dominate. That's the war. And it's not going to get better until those psychopaths are stopped. Dead. And they're not going to stop themselves because they can't. They're addicted to power. They're addicted to their sadistic games and so forth. So that's my viewpoint. I'm pretty much of an existentialist in that respect. However, when you take a few steps back and kick into the Gnostic perspective, it does look a little bit different, and you could say it might look a little bit more positive from the Gnostic viewpoint. Is that clear so far?
So far, so it's clear. I mean, it explains, you know, why we don't see anyone putting the brakes on. You know, and some of the things that, you know, these control freaks are trying to implement, it almost staggers the mind, you know, that they would go through such you know, lengths in order to accomplish their ends. And what you're describing, you know, this psychopathic mentality, it explains a lot of what we see going on in the world. I mean, you can't turn your television on without being, well, I'm not shocked anymore, but horrified at some of the things and that are being perpetrated, you know, and they're not even hiding it anymore. You know, it's almost, you know, blatant right there in your face, you know, deal with it. So I would agree to that extent that, you know, this has to be a component if we're going to survive, that faction or this cabal has to be stopped.
Yeah. And if you might allow me to jump in there for a minute, I'd like to just make two very quick points. The first point is that, unfortunately, most human beings on this planet, I hate to generalize, but most human beings on this planet, unfortunately, I don't think still can recognize what a psychopath is, although we're learning fast, and there's a lot of education about it. And you can, for instance, if you studied for 2 or 3 days just on the internet and researched, you would be able to learn the profile of a psychopath, and you'd be waking up to the fact that they exist in all sectors of society, from education. First of all, they're in the family structures. Then they're in education. Then they're in the government. Then they're in the media. But definitely, without a doubt, one of the greatest problems in the current situation is that the average intelligent human being who possesses empathy and some amount of common sense may not have the capacity to recognize an insane person when that person is standing in front of them. You know? Like a lot of people know who Hillary Clinton is, and they've seen her 1,000 times, and they remember when she was the wife of the president, and she's the Secretary of State, and they walk into a bar or restaurant, and they see her on television making a statement. But do they know that Hillary Clinton is insane? No, they don't. And this is a very great disadvantage. The other disadvantage in waking up and coming to terms with this problem is that some people say, in fact, some guy named, you know who Max Egan is?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
He's Australian, right?
Yep, he certainly is.
I listened to Max Egan a few times years ago on the internet, and he has a program. He's a very articulate person, very well-spoken, very lucid in some of his views. But he has often said in the past, I don't know what his position is now, oh, these people are sick, these psychopaths are running our society, and we do have to take it back from them, but they need more healing than hurting. And we should win back our world by love and not by violence. Well, I couldn't disagree more. People like Hillary Clinton and the other psychopathic, monstrous fiends running around this planet do not need healing more than hurting. They need termination. And so this is the brutal fact of what we're facing. And I don't know about a great spiritual awakening on the planet, but there has to be an awakening to the brutal reality of who these people are and what they're doing before anything can change.
There has to be a recognition of certain level of pragmatism.
One second, Brian.
Sure.
I'm sorry about that, Brian. I had this out before it got lost. The Gnostic view you didn't touch on. What is the Gnostic outcome on that?
Right. Well, let's say we're talking here like people in a state of war, okay? And we're talking about the hard realities. America's turning into a police state. I hear horror stories from Australia. We know that the people in the government are corrupt and they're liars. There is absolutely not one single person in the Australian government who would even admit the obvious fact that the 9/11 cover story is completely bogus, fraudulent. It cannot be true. There was one person in the labor movement in Australia a couple of years back, some guy who represented the dock workers or the labor syndicate who came out and said that, and I don't know whatever happened to him. So we're facing this really bad situation. But if you step back and look at the cosmic perspective on what is happening on the planet as a whole, you can draw two broad conclusions. The first conclusion is that the planet Earth is the body of a divine aeonic being from the galactic center. It's the body of a goddess power named Sophia. And it's going to go its own way, and it is going to pull through this regardless of what happens to us. So the Earth has its own history. We are an experiment on the planet, but we are not the be-all and the end-all of this planet. So in the Gnostic view, we'd have to recognize first the absolute sovereignty and overwhelming superiority of the planet itself, and the consciousness of the planet. And it's a big animal. She's a big animal. She can take care of herself. and whatever she needs to do to eliminate that infection in our species, she can do it. And I think she is going to do it very soon. The second thing that's really intriguing from the Gnostic point of view is they left us this Sophianic creation story, this Sophianic vision story, as I call it, which is a complete and coherent story of our planet, the origin of the human species, the nature of the human species, how we're made up, what we're doing here, what kind of experiment this is that we're in. And they also included in their myth this interesting idea called correction, which is the word diorthosis in Greek. And you find it in the Nag Hammadi manuscripts. You only find it mentioned about two or three times, and it's like a weird clue that was left by the Gnostics. And what they meant by correction was that at a certain moment in the history of the planet itself, in the lifespan of the divine Sophia, the Earth goddess, that she would correct the problems that have arisen with the divine experiment involving humanity as the central, not exclusive, but the central factor in that experiment, that she would realize that the experiment has gone wrong, that humanity is at the point of destroying itself, and that she would correct it. And this is called Sophia's correction. And a wonderful thing about the Gnostic myth is that, and I think you all appreciate this if you've read my book, it's an open-ended myth, isn't it? It doesn't conclude. It's an ongoing myth, and we are involved in the outcome to some extent. It's not like the biblical myth of creation, salvation, and the end of the world, where God knows everything, God is omniscient, and he has already written the final chapter of our story. It's only a matter of time when God decides to enact that chapter. Well, you know that the Sophianic myth is not like that at all. It's a completely open-ended myth. We are in correction now, as far as I can tell. She has been in her correction since March of 2011. And I can't say what the outcome is going to be, but it certainly is fantastic if the Gnostic story is true. It certainly would be the most fantastic moment to be alive on this earth, would be right now, if it is indeed true that the planetary animal mother is making her correction and in some way or another is going to bring the human species through this dangerous crisis. She's not going to do it alone, however, because the Gnostic myth also makes it clear that she relies in some respect on some members of humanity to at least witness and participate in what she's doing. So this is a fantastic opportunity, which is only elucidated from the Gnostic materials, as far as I know. And this is what I'm following lately on Gaia Spora with a group of students who are pursuing this Gaia navigation experiment with me. So I hope that answers your question clearly.
Yes, it answers my question, but I'm sorry, I don't mean to hog up all the space, but I have another question.
Sure.
You mentioned about, you know, and I agree that the psychopaths need to be stopped, but perhaps you can go into why you feel that the psychopathic mind, that it's impossible to, what's the word I'm looking for?
Repatriate.
Yes. Or, you know, I mean, I've heard a lot of people talk about, well, Dick Cheney, since he's had his heart transplant, has, you know, kind of had a no pun intended, a change of heart.
What, they gave him a heart of a hamster? Now he's a sweet little guy. You can pet him. You can pet him, and he kind of sniffles his nose, you know, like he has a hamster heart now. Good for him. They should throw him to the crocodiles, you know. No, I don't believe that psychopaths can be cured. There is no cure for psychopathic, murderous, deceitful insanity. back in the old days, they would take people like that and put them in insane asylums, and they still do, and just leave them there until they die, because, you know, horror movies have been made about people who break out of, about criminally insane people who break out of insane asylums. Halloween, you know, Halloween, the movie, big popular horror movie series, is about an escaped inmate. These people are like escaped inmates. They're criminally and murderously insane. And as far as I know, there is no medical or psychological method, no program, or no scientific evidence that would indicate that they can be corrected, cured, or directed back to a sane and humane form of behavior. There just isn't. And we just have to face it. This is how they are, and they've got to be stopped.
John, can
like
I just
I
ask
say,
you for a second?
Sure.
Where do you think the seed of this psychopathic personality, this psychopathic mindset, comes from?
Yeah, well, this is a big question, and I'm sure you, like me, have racked your brains about this for years. And every sincere and seeking person who recognizes the presence of these interspecies predators, as I call them, recognizes them and recognizes how they have orchestrated events in history over the years and how they have got themselves into the positions of power, not only wants to oppose and defeat them, but also passionately wishes to understand where this malicious strain of humanity came from, okay? I have to say that it's a really, really difficult question to answer. I don't have a snap answer to it, but I think that there are various components through the long term that have led to this presence of these psychopaths in our world. And I would just mention briefly what I consider to be the two primary factors that shape a psychopath, and that have, over the course of history, allowed these people to come to power. The first is that there is the problem of sexuality, that their sexuality is twisted, and that they do not have honest and open, tender, joyful sexual relationships. And the problem with our sexuality of our species runs very deep, and it does go back into history, and it can be analyzed. So it's a very long haul. But the problem of our sexuality goes back to the destruction of the cults of the goddess, beginning some 6,000 years ago. It took a very long time to destroy these goddess cults and the goddess-based, nature-based societies. Those societies in the ancient past were not perfect. By any means, no human society is. But they had, due to the reverence for woman and the place of women in those societies and the reverence for nature and the sacredness of nature, there was a possibility of a more balanced, gender-balanced society for a period of time. When patriarchy rose to power and finally took over the helm around 2000 BC, with the era of Moses and the great theocrats of the Middle East, when patriarchy took over, it had to destroy the relationship between the sexes. So one of the marks of psychopaths is that the relation between the sexes is entirely perverted. And psychopaths, of course, exist in both genders, male and female, and they're all sexual perverts. And the stories we hear about them molesting children are unfortunately and tragically very, very true, because that's the direction that their perverted sexuality drives them. The second factor is much easier to explain, and I've made a point about this recently. It has to do with birth trauma. Now, I'm not the only one who has suggested that psychopaths, the small amount of psychopaths in our society, are due to trauma that occurs at birth, but I would reiterate that point. The particular difficulty is that whatever you may think about human childbirth, you may think it's, you know, oh, what a wonderful miracle, you know, but the body of a child coming through the you know, the pelvic channel of a woman is not a good design, you know. And there is a moment, particularly whether the child is born head first or the other way around, because the neck is the thinnest and weakest part of the organism being born, the neck. And so you have the head comes out generally, and then the body follows. But between the body and the head, there's the neck. And in the neck, which is very soft, even now, to the adult, I mean, you can kill someone with a blow in the neck. You know that. It's the easiest way to kill someone, is hit them on the neck. In the neck are these cranial nerves that are the whole set of junction nerves between the spine and the brain. And I believe that it is in the process of birth, in some cases, these cranial nerves are damaged, and that this is the physiological basis for psychopaths.
An actual wiring disconnect, you mean?
Yeah, it's a serious wiring disconnect.
Yeah.
That's right.
You've actually...
Go
on, Brian.
It actually makes a lot of sense because, you know, in dealing with human behavior, yes, a lot of it comes down to what we would term in a very simple way wiring. And there are certain conditions that can be dealt with and certain ones that cannot be dealt with, such as delusional disorder, for example.
Right.
There is no medicine, no pharmacological or no therapeutic protocol that can bring someone back once they've lapsed into or been, for some reason, whether it's chemically, by trauma or what have you, brought into delusional disorder. So I see what you're saying completely and agree with it fully. And there was even a well-known CIA, ex-CIA guy, son of an oil family, at a blogging convention, who even said, and his assessment was very much like yours. He said, one bullet per top 6,000 contain the lower layers and then begin restructuring in a bridge to a newer tomorrow. And yes, to many people that sounds violent, or that sounds, but look at what you're dealing with.
Yeah,
you know?
really look at what you're dealing with. I mean, what is it to threaten to say, we're here, a group of people from different parts of the world, we're having a discussion about taking out, like, killing 6,000 to 10,000 people. Oh, this is really bad. You shouldn't listen to these people on Oculus. And John Lash is recommending that we murder people. But these 6,000 or 10,000 people are recommending to murder us.
They're recommending to murder billions,
and
hundreds of millions.
Yeah, and they're going to murder billions. And now they're like someone said at the beginning here, excuse me, I can't remember all of you speaking, they're absolutely blatant about it. You know, they're no longer pretending that they're not going to do that. And so what's worse, us here talking about how to save the better part of the human species who don't want to harm each other and would just like to get along by murder, or to sit back and let them commit mass genocide as they've already done for the last 150 years? You know, what's better?
I completely understand what you're saying, and you know, 6,000 people is nothing to them in terms of collateral damage in a war. You can lose 6,000 people in a week.
That's right.
Having said that, I'm not
wars
someone who advocates.
They've lost 6,000 in a day.
I'm not somebody
who
personally advocates violence, but I was actually having this discussion with David the other day, just wondering why it actually hasn't happened yet. I mean, we've got enough people who have been, to use the term, victims directly of this regime, this cabal, you know, people in the military,
right,
people in mind control monarch programs, people who have been directly and completely screwed with, who have skills. We've got people who were in the military and they have skills and they're out of it now. They're still dealing with the repercussions and they're angry.
Right.
Why haven't any of them done something? And then, and again, I'm not advocating that they should, but it makes me wonder why they haven't.
Well, I ask myself that question all the time. Yeah.
Can I say something?
I ask myself that question every day. I live with that question every day. Of course, at the same time, I'm thinking what I'm going to do. But at the same time, I do wonder about that, and I particularly wonder about the military, who would have the ability to go and, you know, do a black op type operation. I don't know. It's a very baffling question, but it certainly is, you know, suspenseful, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
It's very suspenseful. Yeah.
It's almost as if you're waiting for another 7 days in May, but with a totally different ending kind of thing. But not, you know, not in such a limited scope as that film was. But, you know, it's just kind of, I've heard many, many people speak of that. You know, why isn't anything being, but then again, you do hear a lot, and you don't know what is disinformation or misinformation or misdirection. You do hear a lot lately about, well, certain things have been happening, and you're not, if they were, you obviously wouldn't hear about it on the controlled pipeline known as the mainstream media, for many reasons. Panic, misunderstanding. Have you heard of Benjamin Fulford, for example, and the things he said about the Dragon Societies and their ultimatums, and it's all interesting speculation on my part, just to sit and play with it in my mind to see, well, what may play out. I mean, I think we are reaching a boiling point, so to speak. I mean, I don't know about you, but I'd like to ask you this question, John. I think to a great degree, human behavior being of an organic nature and construct, or so tightly related with the organic aspects of the physical universe, there have to be certain laws that also govern that. I mean, the very simplest one that would come to mind, well, what goes around comes around, karma, this, that, the other thing. On a collective scale, I think that has to apply, and that it is playing itself out in a way right now in certain ways. Do you see that?
Well, I'm not exactly sure. You know, I always like to be able to answer a person's what a person is actually asking me, and not just what I think you are asking me. You know, so I'm not quite sure what your concept of karma is. Personally, I don't believe in karma at all. I don't believe what goes around comes around. I think that evil and deceitful people get away with things all the time and have done for centuries. I don't think there's any cosmic law that catches up with them in another life and punishes them. I think that ethics is a human problem, and we have to solve it on human terms. Human ethics, what is just, what is right, is our responsibility. That's why that's part of the experiment we're in, as I understand it, is that we have the responsibility as human animals, who are different from the other animals on this planet, to establish what is the real basis of ethics and responsibility and morality and justice, if you will, although I never use that term because I don't think there is anything such thing as justice. But there is a correction of wrong behavior. And in the best scenario, people who do wrong to others, people who harm others or deceive, may be able to admit their own error and correct themselves and change. I allow that people can do that. As for those who can't, well, they become a problem to the responsible members of society. It's our problem. There's no cosmic law is in effect, as far as I know, that's going to take care of this. I really don't see it that way.
I don't mean it as an external thing from us. I mean as us being the ones who have to take the responsibility for it and act upon it.
Well, in that sense, I would agree. And I would agree. And by the way, you mentioned Fulford, and I think he's a pathological liar who is unable to tell his own fictions from fact. I think that he's lies wildly and makes things up. He has a messianic complex. What he says does not come true. I do not expect it to come true. Lately, David Wilcock has joined up with him, and they're now talking to this guy, Drake, who is really an obvious COINTELPRO double agent. You have to be pretty naive to believe what this guy Drake is saying. And I'm very angry at those people, I must say. I am really, really angry at them, because this is a very moment when the human race needs to buck up and find its courage and face the predators. And they are playing on the confusion and hope of people in an extremely insidious manner. And I hold them responsible for doing that. And I'm really, really angry about this crap that's going around about mass arrests and lawsuits of the White Dragon Society. It's just a fantasy, and it's not going to help us. It's not going to help.
Yeah, because you see no proof of any of that. There is no evidence for any of that.
And also, if it were happening, if what Drake is saying were happening, that there has been a 20-year concerted effort to set up in the United States, through federal marshals and through a system of the police and the authorities, an alternative system that is going to take down the feds, who we know are all corrupts and criminals. If that were true, it wouldn't be announced through some noodle brain like David Wilcock. You know? Why would they choose David Wilcock to announce it? I mean, give me a break, you know? It would be announced in some legitimate fashion with proof of what they're doing.
He's gaining momentum, isn't it? And they like to attach themselves to that momentum that people are creating in accessing, you know, volumes of people.
Yeah, well, I think David Wilcock has latched onto it just because of his personal fame, because he wants to be a New Age guru. Look at the way he poses himself to be a person of vision, and he's playing on people's fears and giving them false hope. And it's deplorable and disgusting. And I'd like to see him taken out and, you know, given 30 lashes with a big, long, wet noodle, you know?
He's epic. To give,
yeah, right.
An epic lash.
Anything to just stop spreading this false hope, please, you know?
Yeah.
He is kind of a noodle, so.
He is a noodle. You know, well, he
looks like
he came out claiming to be Ed Casey, the reincarnation of Casey. And anybody who comes and claims themselves as someone, then who are they really? I mean, is this a disassociative complex that they have? Is this not accepting, you know, their originality? That's how I perceive it to be. Bevan, you had a question, you had something to say? Bevan?
Yeah, I'm here, David.
Yeah.
I did. And it was mainly about what he was saying about the 6,000 who are in power and the ones that are creating mass genocide. And what John was talking about was how we as humanity should get rid of the 6,000 in order to save billions. And as a concept of violence, I don't look at society as violent or peaceful. I look at it as a union of both. Some aspects are needed where other aspects we don't need at the time. If you look at everything in life, 98% of our realities are based on how we perceive what's happening around us or what we perceive is going on around us. And with that perception, our perceptions can be flawed by not seeing a bigger picture. And I see where he's going, what John was saying about that. And I wanted to bring that to light because you can look at many different aspects that's happening in the world, and based on a limited perception, you can call it violent. Then if you look at it in the broader perception, you can see that something was necessary.
Or in nature, like, I mean, if you look at the universe, there's some violent things that happen in the universe. If you look at it from that perspective, you know, death of a star, you know, asteroids colliding into planets, these things do happen, you know, on a cosmic scale, they happen for a reason, and they're necessary, you know, but on a local scale, you know, it's a very violent event, especially if you happen to be an inhabitant of that planet. So, you know, what is really violent? You know, I mean, the universe we understand is evolving, and that involves change. And any kind of change is going to involve some sort of chaos, which from a perspective can be labeled violent. So
yeah, but there really is a difference between physical or natural violence, such as, for instance, an earthquake or an avalanche would be violent. An avalanche could fall on a small town in Colorado and kill everybody. That would be an extremely violent event of nature. That's not to be compared to moral violence. There is a place in every society, the right place in every human society, big or small, for moral violence is very easy to see. It is in use in the service of protection and defense. So that's the use of violence in a society. You know, some of us are old enough to remember the days when a policeman was somebody that you liked to see, and you would look at that policeman. When I was a kid, I would look at a policeman and think, oh, that person is a hero. He could have saved somebody's life, could save my life. The policeman is, or policewoman, is a person who has a gun. They're trained to knock someone down. They're trained to fight. So if there's a violent robbery in a little store or breaking in someone's house or a woman is being raped, the policeman comes and exercises violence for protection and defense. That is moral violence. And that is the proper place for violence in any society, because in any human society, there are always going to be some people who, for one reason or another, either because they're sick or whatever, will do harm to others. And so it's the responsibility of those, some in the society, to protect. And that's, that's not the violence of these psychopaths and these globalist predators. Their violence is operating, I think you would all agree, their violence is operating on a spectacular scale of insanity. And it is a violence, really, against what lives. They are biophobically violent, if I might use that term. Biophobically. They are so afraid of life, and they are so afraid of the beautiful potential of the thriving, simple, free, thriving human animal and of the planet, that they are hell-bent on destroying it. That's a different kind of violence. That's insane violence.
Rather than relinquish their perceived grip on it and control,
they were talking about people who are delusional. Who's more delusional than them? You know, they're in the delusion of total power. They're in the delusion of a godlike arrogance, aren't they?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But John, what is your take? Do you think that the reason that they're here is part of our evolution, that, you know, in some way, you know, they were necessary in order for us to wake up to our true potential? Or do you think that it's just somebody's, excuse the French, just fucking with us?
I think that the problem with the psychopaths, which is the greatest problem on this planet today, in the psychopaths, in the banking sphere, in government, in the media, in the medical sphere, in the great corporations. Psychopaths are heads of most of the corporations, like Monsanto, Microsoft, and so forth. I think this problem is not, I would not say that it was a necessary lesson that we had to have. It is a lesson, but it's a lesson that arose by default. It's a lesson that arose due to the failure of the human species to occupy itself with its situation here on the planet, its situation here on Earth. I return to this metaphor, which is not actually a metaphor, really, of the divine experiment. The Gnostics in the Sophia myth taught us to see that life on Earth is a divine experiment conceived by the goddess Sophia and other entities in the galactic center. That's in the center of our galaxy, by the way. It's not in the center of the whole universe. These divine beings live. You might think of them as they do not have material forms, or they don't look like angels or anything like that. They're more or less like torrents of light. They're massive serpents and torrents of light. They're like engineers and nurses who cook up these interesting experiments, and then they those experiments, which they allow to unfold in the galactic limbs where planetary worlds arise. The reason for that is because an experiment can affect itself, because there is no place there for sentient life. It is a super sentient super life, but there is no place for sentient life. In order to have sentient life, anything from amoebas to cockroaches to beavers, elephants, whales, and human beings, obviously you need a planetary setting. The planetary setting is the petri dish for the experiment. So these experiments occur in planetary settings, and there are countless millions of experiments going on in the galactic arms of our galaxy. We are one of them. If we are to know our destiny, if we are to survive and even to become an immortal race, we need to know what are the conditions of the divine experiment we've been placed in, and what are we meant to learn in this experiment. Now, all this is Gnostical. All this is based very squarely on the Gnostic teachings and the mystery school revelations. And getting back to the question of facing the psychopaths, this is very pertinent. It may not seem so, but it is. It's pertinent because the divine Sophia had observed, according to what I know of the Gnostic myth and the way that it's currently developing with my group, the divine Sophia, observing these planetary experiments from the core of our galaxy, already observed a number of experiments with the human genome. She saw the human genome, which they call the Anthropos, emerge spontaneously in a number of planetary systems, and she was able to observe, as it were, previous episodes of our current experiment. Can you follow that?
Mm-hmm.
And what she observed was very disturbing, because she saw that our species in these other planetary worlds, these previous Earth-like systems, always tended to turn against its own environment and destroy the setting of the experiment. She was very upset by this, because she herself had engineered the human genome. And she thought, well, wow, why does this, engineered this creature, this human animal creature, the Anthropos, and I gave it certain faculties of learning, communication. I highly gifted it with symbolic abilities, the capacity to think, the ability for wonder, the ability to construct paradigms, the ability to play, which is called the paranoiac or ludic tendencies. So she designed our species with all these wondrous tendencies, allowed it to develop in these different planetary experiments, and watched what happened. And she was really upset because she found out that there was something about the way we're composed that causes us to turn against our own environment and destroy the very setting where we are supposed to learn and grow and thrive. And so she set up this experiment we're in now in specific conditions so that we would learn not how to do that. We would learn to avoid that mistake. And because we haven't learned that, and we haven't observed the learning conditions that she set for us, we fall into the trap of the psychopaths by default. So no, it's not something that we had to have happen, but it is something that has happened, and now it's the deal breaker for this experiment.
John, I'd like to just talk about the collective imagination as it becomes awake and aware.
Sure.
What do you perceive that? Obviously, and I don't mean to put it into a technological reference, but what do you perceive of how the collective imagination is going to play a part in this eradication of the psychopath?
Well, it's a really good question. It's a fantastic question. And the whole awakening of the collective imagination, I think, is a great, great topic. Again, I think that the Gnostics' teachings have a lot to offer us in this respect, particularly because they show us what is the true imagination rather than a fantastic or demented imagination. They show us what it is, and they provide certain guidelines and parameters for directing our imagination in a sane and healthy way. I would say that if there is a possibility of the collective imagination waking up today, it would be waking up one person at a time. That is to say, like one cell at a time, okay? So the collective awakening is only possible due to a high quantity, a high incidence of individual awakening, okay? And so the question is, that being so, what is going to give the collective awakening a focus and a direction? It needs to have a focus and a direction if it wakes up, because if it doesn't, then it would just be a kind of chaos of all these individual imaginations. And unfortunately, that is sort of what we have. When you look at the internet, you know, today, I mean, I'm not saying that the internet is this bad thing. It's a good thing in many ways. But one of the problems with the internet is, like, there is so much speculation and so much undisciplined and undirected imagination, so much fantasy in people's imagination, in their use of their imagination. And this is inevitable unless the power of the imagination is harnessed and given a certain direction and a certain focus. So my question would be, granted we could agree that there's a wonderful moment happening when the imagination of humanity is waking up and turning on, what is going to be enable it to focus and to go into a direction of sanity, and also in a direction where people can agree and concur and converge in the acts of their imagination, rather than to diverge into a fantastic mosaic of narcissistic fantasy scenarios? What's going to make that possible, that convergence of imagination? That's what I consider to be the most important questions of our time.
Well, I perceive what I perceive the answer to that question is that we all rely on reference points. We are a replicated being. We replicate what people do in front of us, and we add manifest to that in the course of our lives.
Right.
I feel that there are a group of people, you obviously you included, and us included, that are creating reference points, but in such a way where the injection into the collective consciousness is in a way we are being used as portals by the superconscious, injecting it into the imagination. So this superconscious energy that we are connecting to bring this information, like the information from the Telesto, is in itself doing amazing things within the collective imagination, and this is what we need to, as a species, we need to bring into the public sector, into public awareness, about the technology of the collective imagination, because we've come to that part within our own individual lives of getting to a connected point with a collective. And we're very, it's almost like we're starting again. It's an infancy that we have come back to, so it's like a full circle, and in that infancy we are allowing ourselves to unfold the technology of the collective imagination and its potential flowing through us. Would you agree?
Yeah, I would more or less concur with that description of things. I can resonate pretty closely to that. I can say that in terms of my work on the background of Gnosticism and the mysteries, there are three key points for focus of the human imagination, and they're very clear, and they all interlock, really. They are a unity, but it's kind of like a three-in-one unity. And these three points are eminently and lucidly clear in the Gnostic sacred myth of Sophia. One of those points is humanity itself, anthropos. What is the definition of humanity, and how do we imagine how we originated? How do we imagine how humanity originated? And, of course, the Gnostic creation myth, as you know, gives us an answer to that. I agree with you also. I like the idea that we're at a level of a primal beginning, you know, with the power of our imagination. We're at ground zero, and we build the power and direction of the imagination from this moment on as it awakens. One factor is to imagine what humanity is and where we came from. Second factor is to imagine the earth as a divine being, as Sophia, as a living, conscious, self-conscious, intentional superorganism that originated in the galactic center, whose consciousness originates in the galactic center. And then the third point of focus is the galactic center itself. You know, if I'm correct that we are in correction right now, that we are indeed living through the moment when the planetary animal mother makes the correction of this experiment, then a key factor in that correction is that she links back into a conscious, synergetic connection to the other divine beings in the galactic center. For the larger part of her life, for the larger part of the life of the Earth up till now, this has not been the case. And Sophia, being embodied in the planet, has been somewhat alienated, has been somewhat caught in a very bizarre situation, cosmically speaking. It's also bizarre when you realize that she has been, to a certain extent, autistic. She has an autistic consciousness. And this is something I discovered about 10 years ago in my shamanic explorations of the planet. And so her situation is one of relinking to the galactic center. So these three points, humanity, the planetary goddess, and the gods and goddesses of the galactic center, is really a focus for the new mythology, the future mythology of our species. And that focus, as I said before, is not my invention, but is something that is drawn from the millennial teachings of the mystery schools. And if those schools hadn't been destroyed 2,000 years ago by the rise of Christianity, and elaborate efforts hadn't been made to wipe out this myth, the human imagination would have been working with it for those 2,000 years. And we would not be on the course of destruction and insanity where we find ourselves today.
I'd like to propose an idea, John. Perhaps this is part of the Sophianic correction, like you said. And, I mean, after all, imagination is an aionic technology. So
that's right.
Perhaps part of the Sophianic correction is seeding the collective imagination. And in that way, you know, there could be a mass awakening, at least of those who are in line with that
agenda.
Who are more of a service to others, who are not part of that psychopathic cabal, who are still connected to their source, because and I find, you know, in myself, in my own experience, you know, that as long as I stay connected, you know, to nature, and I try to model myself and allow nature to be my teacher. So I want to stay connected to nature and to stay connected to that source. And I, am, as well as others who like myself, all coming up with the same ideas, the same, you know, so, you know, I know that there isn't a collective imagination. Could this be part of the Sophianic correction?
Well, yes, I think it could be, and but for that to happen, certain conditions will have to be met. In other words, for the collective imagination, for the powers of the collective imagination to suddenly click on, okay, we know that we have this power potentially in all of us. Children have it very brilliantly in their early years. It's driven out of us by education. It's dumbed down by education. The predators who are trying to control the world do everything they can to suppress this power of imagination because they know that if we are allowed to exercise it, there is no way that they can possibly run the game on this planet. So this is a very great opportunity we are facing now. But as you say, it's only those people who have who are in touch with their empathy for others, other human beings, and the empathy for all living creatures, and empathy for the planet itself, who are going to be able to handle the power of their imagination in a way that is consistent with her correction. And this is the great challenge that we face and the great opportunity. And the Gnostics indicated that she would rely on us to help her with her correction. And the very gift that she gave us to do that is called the Luminous Epinoia, E-P-I-N-O-I-A. The Luminous Epinoia is a divine power endowed in us, and that is exactly the imagination. That's the exact translation of that Gnostic term. So sure, this is the fantastic opportunity of this moment. And the way that I see it, I think the chances that the planet itself, which I experience, by the way, as an animal, I call the planet an animal, the technical term in Gaia theory is a superorganism. Okay, you can say it's a superorganism, but I call it her an animal because she acts like an animal. To me, she doesn't maybe look like an animal. She doesn't have fur and four legs and big ears or anything like that, or a snout, but she's an animal to me. And I relate to her right now in this way. She is reaching toward us with the power of her own living currents, with a super flux of power from her own life forces as a goddess. And everybody is going to feel that at some moment. I think that it's quite possible that there would be a moment in correction very, very soon when everyone on the earth would, as it were, be hit by a massive 40,000 volts of the animal power of the earth. And then those who could stay with that would go into her correction. And those who could not stay with that, could not handle that power, would fall back into some kind of dependent or delusional way of living. So this is my feeling. This is a hunch. This is my feeling of the way it might play out in correction. I don't know how that sounds to you.
We even said something like that a few shows, in a discussion, wasn't it, David?
Yes.
The group of us were having, where I said it would probably be like the most catastrophic earthquake that no one feels with their feet. But remember, we were saying that those who were ready for it would simply carry on, and those who weren't would find themselves in any number of states of being or mind that were destructive or even, deadly.
I reckon it's going to be the transit of Venus. I have a distinctive intuitive thought that the energy that's going to be produced from the sun into Venus through the Earth is going to create it's almost going to turn Sapphire on.
Well, that's possible. There is a lot happening with the other planets in correction. This is the process that I'm following in the Gaia navigation experiment. I'm plotting, actually, how correction is happening. And it only takes 3 years for the initial conditions of correction to be set. And the initial conditions are critical. Correction would then continue for the remainder of our experiment here, which is untold amount of time, because humanity is meant to be here on this planet for untold amount of times. But the actual initial conditions of correction are set between March 2011 and March 2014, as far as I can tell. And a number of extraordinary planetary and lunar alignments are coming into play here. The transit of Venus, you would be referring to the coming inferior conjunction of Venus, which is coming up here soon.
Yep, June the 6th.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
That could be. I'm finding that the most decisive moments, it would appear, some of the decisive moments in her process of correction are largely indicated by Jupiter and by what's happening with the planet Jupiter and what's happening with the so-called apsides of Jupiter and the so-called apogee and perigee of the moon. So these are the celestial or astronomical factors that I use to plot her correction. So my my navigational teachings about her corrections are all based on astronomy. They're not fabricated out of thin air.
John, I want to actually try, dispel a couple of myths that are going around at the moment. And one of them is that that humans as a collective are in co-creation with Sapphire, and
right.
in that acknowledgement or that validation of joining with the Sophianic consciousness, with the Sophianic energy. It's almost like there's a saying that when you connect with the soul takes over. Mm-hmm. In my understanding and we'll get to a little bit about the archons a bit later in the show, that the we have a soul which is our connection to the earth, to Sophia. We have a spirit which is connected to the galactic godhead, the galactic core. And my perception of what everybody perceives as the ego is actually a cyborgic implanted by the archons on an interdimensional level to separate the soul and the spirit, to separate Sapphire and to separate Sapphire from the galactic core, as well as humans from the galactic core, from the creator, the source. What would you say to that?
Well, I'd say that's a paraphrase, fairly close paraphrase of what the Gnostics teach us about the role of the archons, certainly. They relate the archons to the monstrous fiction of the ego. And, of course, the chief lord of the archons, the Aldabaoth, is the supreme demented ego. Was a demented alien entity who, in his egotism, takes himself as the lord of all creation. Certainly the concept that the ego is an implant that separates us from reality is an accurate and helpful one, I think. The ego does separate. You want to know what the ego is? It is that which separates. And all separation is an illusion. That doesn't mean, by the way, and I really want to underline this, that we are all one and everything is a unity, because that's also an illusion. No, separation is an illusion because the dynamic and synergy of the entire cosmos in all planets, in all worlds, depends upon relationship. And relationship is the union of things that are different, the meeting, the encountering of things that are different. That is not unity. There is no blank, total, final, ultimate unity. That is also an illusion. The universe is a miracle of diversity in relationship. And as long as we live in that awareness, we overcome the illusion of separation. But the Archons have created this implant, which not only makes us see ourselves as separate, it doesn't allow us to receive. You see, the beauty of the concept of union is that it's the connection of two different things that the one can receive from the other. Like what we are doing now, this is a group of five or six people here. We are not a block unity. We are not all one. We are a union of diverse parts. And that is the absolute beauty of it, that each of those parts, each individual in this conversation is giving and taking. I am in union with the earth. I give to the earth. I receive from the earth. The ego receives. And why do the Archons implant the ego? It's because they cannot participate directly in this miracle of diversity. And yet they can vicariously interject themselves through the ego. But what they do is, it's a dead-end proposition. Because what they do by injecting themselves into our reality and becoming parasitical in our reality is that they prevent us from experiencing our reality, and they end up killing the host, as it were. You see? This is the danger of the archonic mindset. And it does cut us off from soul and does cut us off from spirit.
Exactly. Now, as a comparative mythologist, discovered and looked at most creation stories, and in many of your interviews you've acknowledged that the Sophianic creation story is the most true. Would you say that?
The most complete. The most complete and coherent. I have done this, and getting back to what I said at the beginning of our discussion this evening, I often say this, and I'm not sure that it registers on people what I'm saying. You can investigate all the creation myths of all the cultures of the world, the Greek and Latin mythology, Scandinavian, Polynesian, Egyptian, South American, shamanic indigenous mythologies, the elaborate mythologies of China, whatever, and you will find bits and pieces and anecdotes of stories of creation. For instance, if you go to the Maya myth from the Popol Vuh, which describes the creation of mankind, creation of our species, you'll get a series of little incidents and scenarios. If you go look in Greek mythology, you'll find another explanation of how the world was created or where human beings came from. But none of these, I repeat, none of these presents a consistent and coherent plot that incorporates every single factor of our existence. There is only one myth in the world that does that. And that is just a fact. That is not my interpretation. There's only one myth in the world that tells us about where humanity originated, how the earth originated, who are the divine beings behind the design of the human genome, what was their purpose in designing this experiment, what are the experiments taking place in the galaxy, how do the extraterrestrial or alien intruders appear, what caused them to appear, what are their appearances, motives, and methods, who is the living presence of the earth, what is our connection to her. No other sacred narrative tells us all those things and more, but this one. And you have to understand why such an effort was made to wipe this out by the predators. This myth is the most dangerous story in the world to the predators and the globalist psychopaths. Because if humanity has this myth, which is our divine birthright, you know, it is the singular, exceptional, complete story of humanity. If we have this, we are empowered as a species. And so, you know, I don't have to repeat what tremendous efforts over centuries were taken to wipe out every bit of evidence that this myth had ever existed and was ever taught. And we're very, very fortunate that we retrieved just a flake of it in 1945 in the Nag Hammadi teachings. And there are a few other Gnostic texts outside of Nag Hammadi. And that out of this pitiful handful of remaining evidence, the myth can be recovered and reconstructed. We are really, really lucky.
I also wanted to ask you, what in the precursor to the destruction of the library, the Great Library of Alexandria, where a lot of the Telestai information was stored.
Right.
What the component of the of misogyny came in with the religious zealots, with the
that's right,
the Zadokim?
Zadokites. Yeah, the Zadokim.
The Zadokites.
Right.
Would you insinuate that the concept of misogyny came in through an archontic seeding and someone took it on?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, because the primary archonic seeding in our history, you know, there are many ways to look at the archons. Fortunately, a great deal of the surviving material, especially the Nag Hammadi material, concerns these archontic mind parasites, these cyborg locust-like entities, which are the greys and the reptilians described in these Gnostic texts. Fortunately, as I pointed out, maybe 20%, 15 or 20% of all surviving Gnostic writings are warning us about these entities. They tell us how they first appeared by accident. They appeared by accident, by a side effect of something that Sophia did. They weren't intended to be in this game with us. They weren't intended to be part of this experiment. And then the Gnostic materials go on to describe their methods, their motives, the way that they operate and things like that. So that's very important. But historically speaking, if you want to understand when the archonic bite happened, when did they get a bite into our historical and social reality? Well,
exactly.
That goes back to the Sumerian cuneiform tablets. And the Sumerian cuneiform tablets of the Anunnaki, which have been, as you know, analyzed at great length by Zachariah Sitchin. These Sumerian cuneiform tablets describe a story of the Archons, who are the Anunnaki, and how they are supposedly described as a superior civilization that came to Earth from another planet in the galaxy, apparently, and performed hybrid and genetic experiments on humanity and so forth. And this is all a lie. This is all a channeled fiction. The Archons achieved access to the human mind by channeling. They did it through psychic mediums. And as anyone knows who reads a little bit about ancient history, the kings and tyrants of the ancient Middle East were extremely superstitious people. And they always had soothsayers and mediums and astrologers in their courts to advise them. And so it was through that channel that this phony Anunnaki scenario of the alien master race theme was introduced into history. And one consequence of that was that it gave theocracy a mandate to run the planet. But in order for theocracy to run the planet, the rulership of theocrats and patriarchs, as we see today, they had to suppress women. It had to be a misogynistic program. And that ties back to the point I mentioned earlier, the destruction of the goddess cults by the first by the first examples, the first great theocrats. Theocracy, you know, is a subject that every responsible human being should understand what theocracy is. So let me just say this very briefly in 2 minutes. The word theocracy means rulership by the gods and or by descendants of the gods. So what that means is that in any society where theocracy appears, there are a number of people who claim to be either incarnate gods, like the Egyptian pharaohs, or the descendants of off-planet gods. And in claiming to be so, which is an entire lie, it's totally a lie and a made-up fiction, in claiming to be so, they assert an authority that cannot be questioned by other human beings. And that way they position themselves to be dominators of the social order. Therefore, I would have everyone listening to this talk realize that theocracy is a very bad thing on this planet. There is no benevolent or good form of theocracy. Bill Gates is a theocrat, even though he doesn't proclaim it in the way that Sargon of Akkad might have proclaimed it back in the Middle East some thousands of years ago. But he's a theocrat in that he subscribes to that same delusional fiction that began with Sumerian tablets. The Rockefellers, all the globalists who believe themselves to be lords over humanity, are living out the last chapter of this sick, insidious, genocidal, theocratic program. So beware, my friends, all of you who love humanity and the earth, that theocracy is a very, very bad event on this earth, and that it has to be eliminated in order for humanity to survive.
Very, 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 very good, very good words. The mention of, and I don't know whether a lot of people realize this, the mention of Christos in the Sophianic story.
Right. Right.
Needs to be brought out into the open, into public record.
It really does. Yeah. Yeah,
because, because you know, and I don't like, I don't know what word that I need to put onto this, but it, as Sophia left the pleromic realm, where the
right,
would you call it the deities, the
aeons.
The aeons
yeah.
Exist, and the aeons basically
right.
seed conceptual imagination into the universe and just allow
into
it
material
to...
worlds, not into the universe,
okay.
Into planetary settings in galactic arms. You need
okay.
to have a galaxy as a setting, and
yeah.
within that galaxy, you need to have planetary conditions that will support an experiment with sentient life.
Okay.
So they seed these experiments into planets that arise in the galactic arms.
Okay. And they get basically an agenda from the source, to saying this is what I want to be
no.
created? No?
No, they get no agenda at all. This
okay.
is one of the most fantastic things about how they operate. They operate with pure potentiality, and every experiment that they produce has initial conditions, obviously.
Yep.
The planet has to have an atmosphere, like our atmosphere has to have, you know, 20% oxygen and 80% nitrogen, a component of argon, a component of carbon dioxide, in order for the Petri dish to support life. And then within that Petri dish, our habitat, the experiment unfolds. They do not control these experiments. They set up the experiment, and they endow the sentient life in those planetary laboratories with potential, and then they just let it go. Let it go, man, and develop on its own terms. And their joy and their pleasure and their learning, you could even say, is to watch how these experiments develop on their own terms. They are not omniscient. They do not know the beginning and middle and end of every experiment that they are going to that they set in motion, you see. This is a really important thing to understand about the dynamics of the pleromic gods and the way they operate.
Okay. Also, I wanted you to just to clarify the relationship between Christos and Sophia.
Sophia and Christos.
Yeah.
Well, I'm doing that more and more in the coming months because if I'm correct in plotting the course of her correction, if I'm accurate in navigating with the planetary goddess, then she would be reconnecting, relinking, as it were, to the other aeons in the galactic center this summer in the year of 2012. This linkage is actually current as we speak. This linkage began with the convergence of Jupiter and the apogee of the moon in the month of April. So it's been underway for a little over a month. And by the first week in September of this year, the linkage is formed. And this linkage is formed using the Pleiades in an interesting way that I'm talking about in the Gaia navigation experiment. They need to use the Pleiades as a kind of relay station. So the conscious, superconscious, super alive divinities in the galactic center who have been witnessing Sophia's journey but being unable to interact with her send their signals to the Pleiades as a relay station, and these signals are relayed to the Earth and vice versa. The Earth sends her signals to the Pleiades and they are relayed to the galactic center. Now, as this occurs, I expect that the divine Sophia of our planet would reestablish particular and specific relationships with some of those aeons, two in particular. One of them is named Thelete, and the other is named Christos. Now, when we use these names, we have to realize that they are metaphors, and we are using poetic and mythological language, but they are not merely metaphors. Because Christos and Thelete are actually entities of a particular nature and character. You could say that, if you want to, that they are particular frequencies that have their own signature, that have their own identity. Because the gods and goddesses in the galactic core consist of very powerful frequencies of organic light, of living organic luminosity. And I expect that Sophia is going to be reconnecting with Thelete and reconnecting with the Christos. And as this happens, we could expect her to be able to manage the situation on this planet much more effectively and in much more immediate and direct way than she has been able to do up to the present. Now, originally, these two entities played a very important role in the long prehistory of the Earth. Thelete was the counterpart to Sophia. It was Sophia and Thelete as a couple, who designed the human genome. So in a certain sense, you could say that Thelete and Sophia, in Gnostic terms, are the parents of humanity. They designed the human genome. And when I say that, I mean exactly that. I can tell you how they designed it and what the seven components were that they put in it and what are the physiochemical and neurochemical equivalents to those seven components. So this is not an abstract or a metaphysical statement I'm making. Okay? The role of Christos, as I describe in Not in His Image, and as you probably know, was more like a rescue mission that was undertaken at a certain point after Sophia had turned into the Earth. And this is described in vivid language, you know, I quote the text, that she was overwhelmed by the diversity. She couldn't, in fact, manage the planet she had become. And so the Pleromic Aeons had to send Christos to the Earth to help her organize what we call the symbiosis of all forms of living life into a manageable arrangement so that she could handle it. And then he withdrew and left her with that. So that's the role of Christos. It has nothing to do with the concept of Christos as a divine savior, or as a messiah figure, and it doesn't even have anything to do with the concept of Christos as the seed of divinity in human kind. Both of those concepts would be considered erroneous and misleading from a Gnostic point of view.
So it would have nothing to do with the terminology of Christ consciousness?
Nothing at all, no.
Oh, okay.
Terminology of Christ consciousness is a very recent New Age construction, and it's a narcissistic idea that we are, in a, that the human self is divine, or that you and I and everyone have in us a self that is divine, a self. I am of the opinion, a lot of people would break with me on this one, I know, but let me make my point lucidly clear. I am of the opinion that there is no divine self as such. What the Gnostics taught is that we, humanity, have a divine faculty, which they called nous, N-O-U-S. We have a germ of divine intelligence, which, if we use it properly, allows us to raise ourselves to a level where we can communicate and interact with the very superhuman gods who are the true origin of the created worlds. But we are not gods, and the idea of a Christ consciousness or a godlike self is not a genuine Gnostic idea. It is a specious construction, in my opinion, that arose in the early Christian era through Clement of Alexandria and other wannabe Gnostics who were trying to, who thought that they understood what happened in the mystery schools, you know. One of the things I want to point out for those of you who might be very hard to swallow what I'm saying now, because I know a lot of people are attached to this Christ consciousness idea, but just let me point out one thing to you for your consideration. This is not a dogma. This is not shoving this down your throat. But just for your consideration, if you go out into the natural world and you go into a state of heightened consciousness and stand in the presence of the living beauty and power of this planet, you might find that, on the contrary to feeling that you have a self, you lose all sense of self. And you lose all sense of ego. You experience ego death. So the real mark of cosmic consciousness is not a divine self, but it's ego death. This is what I would ask you to consider.
John, what you mentioned on some of your interviews about the these noises that are coming from the earth. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, you know, I used the metaphor in the Gaia navigation experiment of the mother ship. We can talk about the planet Earth as an animal. Gaia is definitely an animal. I call her Pam for the planetary mother animal, P-A-M. So we affectionately refer to her as Pam. She can also use another metaphor of the mother ship. Now, the Earth is an immense spaceship moving through the galactic arms. It's not riding on water, it's inside a current. It's more like a submarine in that sense. If you can imagine a submarine navigating down the Mississippi River, the Earth is inside the plasmic currents of the galactic arm, and it's navigating. And in the process of her correction, one momentous event is happening on astronomical terms. Until now, due to the peculiar conditions of the solar system. See, the Gnostics taught us this planet has been captured. So the Earth does not belong to the solar system. The solar system is a product of the Archons. It's their world. And they make this very clear in Gnostic cosmology. Sophia allowed the Archons to construct a solar system as their kind of amusement park and their Disney world and their domain. And it is operates in the laws of inorganic physics, largely. And it operates as a celestial mechanics. clockwork mechanics. The Earth is nothing like that. It's a living entity. It's organic. It operates on the laws of organic chemistry. Even the atmosphere is organic. And so it is an organic planet captured in an inorganic planetary system. This is exactly what the Gnostics taught us about our solar system. Now, what's happening in correction is that the mothership is gradually freeing itself from the formation of the rest of the planetary system. That doesn't mean that she will exit the planetary system and become a solitary or wandering planet, although these are now known to exist. She may do that over the long term. It's quite possible that she could do that. But what's happening right now, in this critical three-year period, is that the mothership is breaking away from the holding pattern into which she has been locked due to the involvement, her involvement with the motions of the other planets, the inorganic planets, Mercury, Venus, Mars, Jupiter, and Saturn. Those are the planets of our system. Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto are not planets of our system. They're like probes that follow our system. So as this happens, it is bound to occur that the mothership will experience stress, and the hull of the ship and the internal part of the ship, which is her steam engines, that is the volcanic activity, the volcanoes under the sea, all the thermal and natural gas activity of the Earth is like the steam that she uses to navigate. At the same time, the ionosphere and the atmosphere, which you could consider to be the sails of the mothership, to complete the analogy, she's a steam sailor. Those elements are all undergoing tremendous stress because she's taking her own course. She's beginning to self-navigate. Correction in astronomical terms means that the Earth is becoming an independent, self-navigating planetary vehicle. And as that happens, there's bound to be cracking and racking of the tectonic plates of the Earth. And there's bound to be weird sound in the ionosphere, which would be like the sound of violent winds in the sails of a sailboat on the high seas. So picture her as a steam sailor on the high seas of the galaxy. And so I am convinced, although there's a lot of faking and a lot of phony bullshit and a lot of people just fucking with our minds because they want to have hits on their YouTube channels, putting on phony noises, I am convinced that to some extent these noises are real. Some of them cannot be dismissed as fraud. And to that extent, we are actually hearing the physical and mechanical stress of the mothership as she moves into her own course of navigation, asserting her autonomy among the fleet of the planets. I'm absolutely convinced this is the case.
John, we just have a question from one of the people in the chat room. Linda Blackwood asks, what can we do to help with this linkage with the Sofiane consciousness? What can we do as individuals at this present point in time?
That's a beautiful question. Thank you, Linda, for that question.
Hello?
Yep, sorry about that. Yep. Just waiting for John. We'll just keep on waiting for John, everybody, so just stay focused, and we'll get to the answer of that question. Does anybody want to go on with something while we get John back on?
well, I think that, you know, one of the most important things that we individually can do is to reconnect with our source, which is, we know that that's in our hearts. You know, everybody spends a lot of time, you know, with a lot of mental activity, you know, and when you're in that mental, you know, frame of mind, it can drive you crazy. Because, like I said before, you're not in complete control of your own mind, you know, and what goes in and what, you know, and what's coming out. Because we are connected in that collective consciousness, and there's a lot of things going on in there. But within your heart, you can find stillness. You can find silence. You can find peace. And you can find that connection. And I think it's very important for people to reestablish that connection with their hearts, with their feelings and their emotions. Because that is where we get our, you know, just like the core of the earth and the core of the sun, you know, are connection points. These are the central, you know, chakras. This is where we get our information, and this is where our information goes out into the world through that heart morphogenic field that comes out of your heart. And it's important for people to reestablish that connection with their feelings. Get out of your heads.
Get into the moment.
Lisa, what do you feel about all of this, this information that John's saying?
Well, a lot of it's ringing very true, I have to say. I guess the only point I'm uncomfortable with at this point is the idea of mass assassinations. I mean, clearly we have to purge this planet of this influence, but maybe she's going to do it for us anyway. Maybe she's going to do it for us simply through, as we, you know, there's too much talk about the different energies as we're moving through this galactic arm, and as we're moving through the universe, the energies that we're coming into contact with, anything that is of that psychopathic vibration just may not be able to handle it. I mean, I loved what that whole scenario that he talked about. What if they simply just disappear? Spontaneously combust.
You have to be prepared, I think, for all possibilities. So I think there are people out there who are prepared for that. I really do. And should that be the case, then that would be the case. And no one, you know, it's not as if we're sitting here calling for anything. No, we're just simply reflecting on what we're perceiving. And
so did you lose me there for a minute?
Yeah, it's just
for a while.
Okay, you got most of the answer. Did you get about the Venus-Jupiter conjunction?
No.
Okay. Well, in answer to that question, the Venus-Jupiter conjunction of March 13th was the signal of the beginning of this reconciliation of men and women, and that we would come together as equals in sharing the Sophianic vision story and acting as warriors to protect humanity and the Earth. That's all. Okay.
Yep.
So, okay. What do we do as individuals? What does that really look like in our daily lives?
It's about communicating openly and honestly with each other. Let's say that making an agreement between men and women. It has to do with couples making an agreement that the past is over, that we're in a new configuration in life, and that every human relationship is a ménage à trois. It's like the man, the woman, and the earth, you know? And so it's about becoming consecrated to the earth, which you can do, by the way, by simply taking the Gaian tantric vow. Quite a few members of the navigation experiment have done this. If you want to go see what it is, it's a very simple thing to do. Go look at metahistory.org and go to Planetary Tantra. Click on Planetary Tantra, and you'll see it says Gaian Tantra Vow.
And this is an act, a ritual act of consecration that connects us to her and connects us to what she's doing now, to her process of realigning with the galactic center. And it's mostly a process of learning, sharing this great experiment, teaching and learning, becoming teachers to each other, becoming students to each other, and learning through love, using our love for each other and using pleasure and sexuality to heal and to learn. That's what it's about.
That's I think that's why the in the tarot, the lovers are the most important card. And that sort of sends says to me that, you know, it's what the couple, I mean, it's the Sophia Christos myth sort of perpetuated within our own within the consciousness of two people.
Yeah, there's actually a famous line in the Nag Hammadi text that says that the originator, that is to say the one unity that is behind all of the galaxies and all of the worlds, and operates through these aeons who are called the generators. So in Gnosis there is a monotheism and a polytheism both. There is a one originator that is unknowable at the core of everything, and then there are the aeons who produce these worlds. And there's a famous line that says that the originator wishes that everything that happens in the cosmos would be generated by a syzygy, that is to say a dyad or a coupling. And the gods operate themselves in this way. The gods are lovers, you know. Sophia and Thelete, operating as a couple, designed and engineered the very genomic structure that you are experiencing right now, that enables you to have this conversation with me, that enables you to live and breathe. And so that's why the lovers is such a powerful archetype. Sophia needs our love to open her dream to humanity. She cannot open her dream to humanity at large unless she does it through the dyadic units of lovers. I'm absolutely convinced of this.
Yep,
and I have lived this truth.
I totally agree with you. Look, I'm going to throw something out there, and this is, we've got a minute left of your time, John. So thank you very much for keeping up at a late such a late hour in Spain. Mm-hmm. My perception is because of this cyborgic construct of this local galactic belt of that the Archons have created.
Right.
I personally believe that this is actually going to start falling apart. These mechanisms of planets that have been created are going to start deconstructing and falling apart. And this in itself, once the information gets into the collective imagination, will either shock or start a healing process with people. In some way, and I believe in allowing that the transcendence into the universal mind, which is our collective destiny. I perceive is that the human imagination will do this in co-creation with Sophia. It will deconstruct the illusion which has been created, this virtual reality the virtual reality component which seems to be quite prevalent in our society, and the deconstruction of this local galactic belt will be a trigger within itself for a lot of people. I don't think a lot of people will handle it. But I think that those people who have aided the correction, the Sophia correction, will withstand the event. So, on concluding that, I'd just like to to say thank you very, very much for your time, and all of us at Oculus Radio, and I'm sure all of us in the chat room. And for those who are yet to download this archive in Blog Talk Radio that this is a very important, probably the most important set of issues of our time. I know within myself, and reading Not in His Image, I haven't been directed to any sort of mentorish energies within my life, and I'm 55 this year. But as soon as I read that book, something turned me on. Something, and I mean that on all levels. Something, I found the on switch, and it's almost like the on switch disintegrated, so it's permanently on at the moment. And I feel it will always be permanently on. And that we will, in the co-creation with Sophia, guide this planet into a life of that we're supposed to, of our divine destiny, of our collective human divine destiny. And I mean the collective, the pleasure, exactly. Thank you, Octavia. In the pleasure that we all see. And in saying that, again, thank you, John, for joining us.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate you inviting me. I want to say that I think you appreciate that I am, you know, not a guru, and I always emphasize that it is the story itself that leads and teaches, not me. It's the story. It's the power of the myth. And I wouldn't preclude that the whole holographic matrix could be shattered in a spectacular fashion. I wouldn't preclude that at all, because I know that the goddess has one supreme power, and that is beauty. Her beauty could shatter it in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, well said.
So stay in her. We'll all agree on that.
Yes. Yes, we will all agree. Yes.
So thank you very much, and perhaps I'll catch you again sometime.
Well, please keep us up to date on everything you're doing, and anything that new that comes to light, we'll gladly be a voice for you. There's no doubt about that.
Certainly.
Okay. Well,
thank you very much.
Okay.
Wish you safe passage.
Safe passage to you.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
John.
Thanks, John.
Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Oh, good stuff.
There you go. So let's go to a music break, and we'll have the gang, as I'll start calling you, the gang, the posse, the Oculus posse, including all our lovely members.
Don't say that too fast. That'll come out all wrong.
And we'll surmise on what's just been said in the last 2 hours, and I think anybody who is involved in this injection of their individual consciousness or psyche into the collective psyche, I think John is probably one of the exponents, the foremost exponents that one needs to connect with as a catalyst. I'm not saying it's the be-all and end-all, and I'm not putting John into a guru status. I'm just saying that his information was the capstone of my individual journey, and I feel that it was the ET component, the Archon component that has been eradicated out of our divine script, and we've been left basically flailing and without this information, and it's very important. Do you agree, ladies and gentlemen, gang of the posse of Oculus?
Yeah. I need to heat up my coffee after all that.
Okay, well, we're going to go on a break, and we'll see you after the break. I think we've got about, I'll do a nice long song so we can all have a nice long break. So let's go into 8 minutes we've got into a beautiful song, and we'll see you at the end of the break here on Oculus Radio. Don't forget, we have a call-in line, 347-237-4516. And as again, thank you all in the chat room. It's been fantastic. Gregory, amazing. Linda, amazing. Laurie, amazing. Everybody, make further rounds amazing, and I hope to see you, as we continue this journey. So we'll continue after the music break.
Thank you.
Well, welcome back to Oculus Radio, everybody. And we've just concluded 2 hours with John Lamb Lash, a comparative mythologist and author of Not in His Image and a number of other publications, which I'm sure has piqued your interest in exactly what's going on. And the reason I feel that we needed to have John on the show was giving us a succinct and viable option on what is actually happening on the planet from a perspective that originates pre-patriarchal, and the information that he brings into the back into the public's the public realm is information that was taken out by the Christian Crusades and the obliteration of divine script and sacred information by
whatever you want. The original psychopaths.
The original psychopaths. Thank you, Lisa, my interpreter. So guys and gals, let's just sort of talk about the information that that John has and put our own slant to it, because I think it's important for us in this state of very high manifestation, high end manifestation, especially for those who are really connecting empathically on a collective level. We need to write our script into this new paradigm. We need to create, recreate ourselves. We have to create ourselves the way we want to be once this term that you say, Lisa, there's a shelf life for these people, these psychopaths. And what happens when they don't exist anymore? What happens when the fear has left the planet? And it is going to. There's no doubt about that. Yeah.
Well, that kind of gets back to that article that I wrote, in that we haven't imagined it yet. We haven't even gone there. I mean, that's what we need to start doing. But this is why there's so little, if any, post-2012 information, is because we haven't imagined it yet.
Yeah. And I just want to point out about the what John was saying about these psychopaths and how they have to be removed. And I believe that the collective imagination, once aware to a certain point, will create that. It's almost like a rubbered out. Because of the power of, we understand and estimate and have come in contact with our own power and what we're capable of as an individual. So put that on a massive, of a collective group of people, who are connected to the superconscious, and bring this and become portals, because they've disengaged with this egoic implant and found their destiny. And in this, in creating reference points for other people to understand how, because we all like to know how things are done. How are people creating reference points? How are people transcending this moment and becoming fearless and becoming full of wisdom and becoming the person that they always seeked to be.
I agree, and I like Lisa said, I agree that they have to be removed. They have to stop. I don't know if I would go so far as saying that they need to be assassinated or killed, only because I don't believe that you can solve your problems with the same energy that created it. That makes no sense to me. But I do believe that, they need to be stopped. I also believe that we have more power than we give ourselves credit with that collective consciousness. And I believe that, you know, that there is a technology that is being activated here, and perhaps it's part of the Sophianic correction. But I believe that, you know, what Lisa said is also very true. We need to imagine what the future is going to be. We've got to write that, you know, for ourselves. And just as Sophia is beginning to navigate herself, I believe that that is also coming, you know, into the human consciousness.
David.
That the people themselves are becoming self-governing, and this is the whole idea of sovereignty that we talked about. You know, just as the planet is becoming self-navigating, as John said, I believe that the people are yearning to become self-governed, and this is the pulse I think that's being sent out in the collective consciousness. And our imagination, I think, is starting to take that form, and I believe that we're beginning to understand that we can be individually collective together as one. And
I do feel that mankind is on a precipice right now, and that precipice is about to unfold in an unforeseen way.
It never turns out the way we think it's going to turn out.
Yeah, it's gonna come out in such a way that neither you or I don't think anyone else has ever imagined. And with everything in conjunction and lining up, and those who are in tune with that, what my feeling is and what I've been sensing, that those who are holding on to that greed or psychopath mentality are actually already destroying themselves from within. It's just, you can see it around you. You can see the structure is falling, and the ones who were holding on to all this power are literally dismantling right before us because they can't navigate through this higher vibration. And that's what we've been seeing. I mean, it's been obvious. You see things falling apart right in front of us every day. You know, like Chase and Morgan, $200 billion lost in a few days, and people just literally losing that grip of power, and they can't hold on to it because that energy that they're used to leveraging themselves is no longer there for them.
Would you call it the art of speculation is diminishing? You know, this has to be the powers that were had to have hooked into a technology, and the technology was speculation, and they created their world, you know, in this speculation, and we live in this construct, this matrix of speculation, and now because of events like that, Bevan. That this speculation is deconstructing.
Yeah, a lot of these things are deconstructing. It's not just the speculation aspect. It's everything from the ground up. I mean, look at ourselves. Look how much we deconstructed and evolved into what we're becoming here as a group just in this short period of time. Okay, and this is happening globally.
I want to throw out a real amazing thank you from Laurie Freeman from all of us for her donations to Oculus Radio. That will help us get a good microphone and pay for our monthly bill. So thank you again, Laurie, from all of us here at Oculus. You're an amazing person.
What I was going to say was, you know, mankind has been used to this model of looking at the past, and even if you want to take it to a sacred geometry level, if you know the past and the present, you can tell the future. Well, I think those equations no longer hold. They're breaking down. They're subject to change, just as perception of physics was once to believe, was so stuck in the Newtonian model. And then along came what Einstein said was spooky aspects of physics and quantum physics. And we're looking at, at understandings and ways of perceiving that I don't think we can imagine based on the old ways of imagining, utilizing past and present to imagine future. No, what unfolds next is going to be something quite unexpected. All the think tanks in the world could work 24/7. They're not going to be able to come up with it because the possibilities in this universe are infinite. So something from the infinite is what is unfolding in front of us.
Exactly.
And the factor that they're missing in their equation is that X factor. And the X factor, what I see, I may be wrong, but the X factor is what they're missing is the planet itself, our planet that we reside in. And they didn't calibrate that factor in.
I think what's actually being disconstructed here is our illusions. The illusion that the government was here for our benefit is gone. The illusion that, we are free is gone. The illusion that money is real is going. And as these illusions disappear and reality, the truth of what's behind the illusion sets in, I think we're collectively left with the question, okay, now here's what really is. What are you going to do with this? And this is part of our imagination. This is our response. Mm-hmm. What are we going to do now that the illusion is gone and you see the reality for what it is? And this is, I think, the apocalypse is all about. It's a revealing. And now that the illusion is gone and the truth is revealed, what are we going to do about it? How are we collectively going to handle this? We know that there are options out there. We know that there's a technology. We know that there's, because these illusions are falling away, and we see that there is an opportunity for us. And this is that what I think John was talking about. We have a tremendous opportunity right now because we can see more clearly. And because we can see more clearly, we can navigate ourselves in a more cohesive and in a way that's going to benefit the majority of mankind rather than the minority.
And pressure will dictate how we go and where we go. Not pressures that... not the old kind of pressures, the new kind of pressures, the what now pressure. And that's not a bad thing. That's a very good thing. That forces all to dig deep within themselves. And to use a phrase that's been used many, many times, you become that change you wish to see. That's not an empty phrase. That's the essence of responsibility, period. I'm not looking to anything or anyone other than us. And when I mean us, I mean mankind to do what is necessary. Yes, there is a great source to all of this universe, call it God, call it whatever you will, but that's exactly what is demanded of us. That we take responsibility and we take the reins and we go. And I think that's the magnificence of this journey.
Lisa, just before you start, and I'm sorry to interject. Laurie said, I think it was Laurie, no, Linda. Linda said we need a joint vision. And this is what you and I have been talking about and a next stage. Of what I feel that we need to, where we need to go, in creating an event, and I don't know, I might I might get you to talk about, just after you say what you want to say, to talk about that little bit of information that someone posted on lisamharrison.com about, you know our potential and where we can go next. And I feel that that tiny little bit of information was extremely insightful, and it is exactly where we need to go. So, yeah, I'll leave it up to you to explain that.
Okay. Well, what I was going to say was touching on what we talked about last show in regards to, or what I talked about in regards to my evolving hypotheses about the Vatican, taking what John's now said into consideration, if I was to consider the Vatican as the human representatives of the archons on this planet, which I do, essentially, and if I'm correct in that the Antichrist is actually will be the next pope, and will represent the demise of the Vatican. I mean, it makes sense to me that they use the term Antichrist for a reason. I mean, they already had Satan, they already had the devil, but they chose the term Antichrist for a reason. And for me, if the term Christ represented the birth of that whole organization, then it would be the Antichrist that represents its demise. If that's the case, and we end up with an individual who exposes the church for what it is and shatters the illusions of the, and it's not just the Catholics either, because every religion really is an offshoot of it, then what that's going to do to the religious psyche on this planet, I can't even fathom at this point. But that was, so that's what I wanted to say about that. I don't know if you've got.
Well, I believe the further you're away from the true belief system that's really happening here, the more damage is going to happen to you, because the quagmire that you have to go through to get back to a succinct understanding about what truly is happening. I've just put a link into the Blog Talk chat website, and I want you all to have a look at it. This is the this is archons.org. This is the Order of Saint Andrew the Apostle. Now, if you actually stroll through this website, you'll find that this is the religious connection to state and religion. There's a lot of meetings with high profile dignitaries and politicians. To me, this is the meeting point, and this is where the information goes out and I believe that these obviously are connected to the Vatican. So yeah, just make what you want of it, and I'm not going to say I may be wrong, but I've just said it. And I've been doing this research ever since I came into the whole concept of the archons, about, you know, where are they isolated? I mean, we all know that the true agenda of the psychopaths is basically at this present point, at this moment in time, is to gut America's heart out, right? There is no doubt about it, because once they gut the only superpower that ever was out, then it will be like a domino effect. Everybody will just, but basically, it's like that movie Goldmember, one of the Austin Powers, what's his name? Michael Caine comes in as Austin Powers' father, and he says to one of the guards who's got a gun, you know, "Do you know who I am?" And he says, "You should just fall down." And the guy just fell down in front of him with a gun in his hand. That to me is the metaphor. I mean, you know, and I've been into this, you know, for 20 to 30 years about this deconstruction of America. I lived in the States in the 80s, you know, for 7 years. I felt it, and as someone who could actually leave there and succinctly interpret, you know, through my poetry, what I got out of that experience was you know, the level of disinformation, the level of illusion, the level of, you know, it was like being in a virtual reality experience, and everybody was falling under this hypnotic understand. Well, not everybody, but most those who were susceptible to it were falling under this very hypnotic trance of materialism, and they were, you know, just buying anything, and I mean anything, any bit of information that came into being, because they had the money, which was the cognitive acceptance, but it was this blind acceptance that people took this information into their own psyche and owned it and took responsibility for it. So, you know, coming, you know, 20,000 miles away from America when I did, you know, in 89, and I had, you know, since then I've had no impetus to go anywhere, but just to dissect, you know, the energy that I brought back with me. You know, it came to all of this. It came to, you know, these people need help. These people need, extremely objective people to go into this fight with them, because there's something really wrong here. You know, and the moment that it really hit home for me was that movie, and I was at a friend's place in Long Island Sound. And that movie, The Day After, and we've talked about this between the guys in Oculus. That, and I was picking up, empathically picking up on the whole, you know, the whole country was just in this fear, and you know, you guys have remember that as well. That movie, it was a turning point, you know, because it was like the anticipation of that, something like that. You know, what would it be like, you know, the day after a nuclear strike, you know, on the U.S. You know, but it was a hypothesis. It was a hypothetical. But the intonation within that movie of the hidden enemy, which now we can actually preclude to be the Archons, this interdimensional seeding which has run rampant and now is isolated within the American, within the political system in America. So, you know, it's these, and this is why in our spiel of Oculus Radio, you know, we call to the mystic shamans, the poetic vagabonds, and the artisans of our counterculture. We know that there are people like us who have been on the periphery of this, looking in, watching it, watching what the hell is going on. And although we have our own fear base that we've had to deal with, we've been keeping a very close eye on it. Tomorrow said we can be very objective with it and give very succinct and directive answers into, not to solve the problem, but into what's going on, into the mechanisms of what's going on. Anyway, that's my spiel.
Well, the thing is, you find so many people, well, you know, well, among us on this panel who live in America, you find so many people that when you do say certain things, reveal certain things to them about the realities of what's going on around them that runs contrary to what they're fed or what they believe, et cetera, all of a sudden you find a remarkable waking up in them, in that they find justification. Oh, that's why I've been feeling this horrible sense of this, and I've been in this sense of confusion and this turmoil and guiding my life this way. And it's very simple once someone's eyes are open to it. And then what you're finding here is it's happening more and more on a greater scale every day, and that's the beautiful thing about it. You know, I don't think the doom and gloom scenarios that so many like to throw out there are going to come to pass here. I just don't see it happening with what I see happening in people, where they're giving their internal turmoil, that, let's just call it that not zeitgeist in the name of what they hijacked for that film, but the true German definition of the word, meaning spirit of the times, they're ready to give it a name and to deal with it, and on their own, and that's the good thing I see happening, have seen happening. I do believe that for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. Even when it comes to the collective, there is the collective unconscious. There is absolutely. So events like all of this vast planning, and then events like 9/11, well, they didn't go as planned, the way everyone thought.
Okay, Brian, I'm sorry to interject. We have a caller. Are you still there, caller?
Yes.
Yes.
Hello.
Hello, everybody. Can you
hey,
hear me?
How are you?
Good.
You want to just state your name and then you can say what you need to say or say what you want to say.
Yeah. Hi, everybody. It's Dwayne. Yours truly.
Oh, hi, Dwayne.
Hi, Dwayne.
How are you guys doing? Hello. Nice to talk to you all again. No, I was actually listening to the show live, and I did actually have something that I wanted to add to it. That kind of reaffirms what you were talking about. With the collective consciousness and the impact that it actually has to our humanity, in fact. And there was a scientific experiment which kind of brings the scientific aspect into this, and it was more on the quantum level, though. So there were, like, quantum scientists who did this slit experiment, where first they put one slit and put it up against this projector, if you will, and they have, like, this cannon that shoots these marbles. And the expectation that these marbles would go through this slit and form a band on the back wall. They then do it again with two slits on a board and in the back projector or whatever, and then they would expect to see two bands. So they shoot the marbles, and sure enough, through the two slits, the marbles go through and there forms two bands on the back end. So then they do it with a wave. You know, then you send two waves through there through the two slits, and that actually causes it to interfere with each other. So you have this interference pattern, and you see multiple bands across the back of this projector, right? So now they want to take this step down to the quantum level. And so they're doing the same thing, and they're doing it with these your particles, your little particles that they're actually sending through. Single electrons leave through this gun. And they send it through one slit, and sure enough, you get this one band. They do it again through two slits, and they expect to see two bands, just like regular particles. But in fact, they see interference patterns, which they were not expecting at all. You know, so they're sending these particles one by one. And if this is the case, then how is it possible that it's getting interference? So they postulate or whatever that the particle is, in fact, it leaves as a single particle, and it turns into a wave of possibilities, if you will, ultimately bounces off of itself in order to create the interference pattern on the back, which is really strange in and of itself. So now this particle is behaving erratically, if you will, which is quantum mechanics. But then the interesting part about this, or the conscious part of this, is that to understand this interference pattern that's coming from these particles that they weren't expecting, they put, like, a measurement, if you will, eyeballs to see what's actually happening. So when they actually do this, and then they start sending these particles out again through the double slit, this time they don't actually get an interference pattern. They get two line patterns, which defies the fact that what they just experimented on before gave them an interference pattern. They replicated the same exact test, but used a measurement to see what was going on, and then the pattern changed.
No.
Brian's our Oculus physicist. Brian can decipher that.
In my mind, you're almost seeing an intelligence at work there, aren't you? In a sense.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You're seeing almost a reflection on a decision being made, and that traces back to what, in my mind, I believe that every particle and every wave, every action, is of a conscious source, of a conscious construct, that is the enormity of this universe, the multiverses, the dimensions, all of it. And, you know, so, I mean, you know, does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it absolutely makes sense to me. And the way that I was looking at it, if there is a conscious aspect to it, is it the particle itself, like, saying, oh, wait, I'm being looked at, so I better behave regularly, or is it the other way around, that our consciousness is forcing these particles to behave in a certain way? So our expectation then forces this matter, if you will, which is also part of the living construct of this universe. You know, so in essence, like, we have a physical connection, if you will, right, or a metaphysical connection to everything in existence. And mm-hmm. and then by through those connections, we influence what happens around us. It's because everything is vibration. Everything in this universe is vibration. So yeah, absolutely.
And also it's as if we're being taught that we better learn the concept of holding paradoxes in our minds as opposed to what we've been led to believe, that paradoxes, well, it's a paradox because, and oh, we have to accept one side or the other, well, when actually there might be 3, 4, 5 or many, many, many sides to a paradox, and whereas you have to learn to accept them all as potential. And I think that's a leap in the evolution of consciousness, you know.
Yeah.
And that how it will reverberate in everyday existence, I think we're beginning to see that, you know, in that consciousness is expanding.
Yeah.
In the human body, and I mean by that I mean all of humanity, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I was actually talking to Bob earlier today about an experience I just had. Before my daughter was born, when I knew that she was coming, I started to paint a painting for her, a birth gift, if you will. So I decided to paint in acrylic a unicorn on an ice shelf, using all different shades of blue and white. It occurred to me, and keep in mind that my daughter actually hasn't seen this painting at all. It was intended for her birth, but I actually never finished it. You know, there was details I wanted to do that I never did, and then it kind of got buried and I forgot about it. I pulled it out yesterday, actually, and that's when it occurred to me, because I'm sitting here looking at this painting. I'm like, wait a minute. My daughter's favorite animal is a horse. Her favorite color is blue. And, like, I apparently knew this before she was born, you know, and that's that connection. And, you know, and people say, well, yeah, but, you know, that's your daughter, that's different, but it's not, you know. The reason why it's different is because I was in tune to her, you know, just like you could be in tune to anybody else. And that shows that physical connection and the ability that you have. And if you have that ability to connect with other people on that level, then you also have the ability to influence, which I think is where you have the good influence and then the negative influence. And that negative influence, I think, has predominated over this planet for far too long.
Yes, most definitely it has. And now I think it's come down to, choosing time, you know. In any given situation, there's a negative and a positive way to go. And
sure.
We're coming down to a whole lot of them real fast. I mean, every day we're seeing more and more of that. And, you know, is it that you had the connection with her, or she had the connection with you, or the connection was multi-dynamic, so to speak? Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, I tend to look at the more expansive picture and say that it was mutual and more. You know, you're cutting across time, you're cutting across all barriers we know in this three-dimensional existence, and you were cutting into the higher realms, the high apparatus when you were doing that. And that's a part of what we are. It's a part of what's been denied us through the architects of what we presently call society in this world. So a lot of interesting things to come, I think.
Yep, there's no doubt about that. I'm just going to cut to Bevan, and then I want Lisa to finish off the show with this information that she's got. And Bevan just had a visual, so an empathic visual. So, Bevan, do you want to go into that?
Yeah, I will. With everything that was being said with John and the psychopath and the negative vibes of the government and everything that was pretty much dominating the conversation these past couple hours, okay, what came to me was very vivid, and it was very simplified, and some of the simplified things are the most purest truth. I would assume everybody agrees.
Oh, yes.
Okay. The visualization I got was everything that is alive must feed. Everything. Ourselves, the animals, the planet Earth, the universe feeds off of something. What I got a visual of is those who are not transitioning are no longer feeding. They're starving to death. They're actually dying because they're no longer being fed what they need. And the archons and everything of those negative energies feed off of fear. Fear is disappearing off of this plane. Obedience to what they want you to do is disappearing from this plane. If they're actually dry, they're starving.
You're making me laugh, Bevan, because I had the same thing sometimes.
And I saw the visualization, and actually the visualization that was given me was what's happening in Ethiopia and some of the third world countries of lack of food.
Scarcity.
Yeah. And that's what Sophia is pretty much trying to tell us. I'm already taking care of that. I'm no longer feeding them.
So do you reckon it's got something to do with, like, Sophia now is becoming the mirror and mirroring them who they are? So basically they live by their sword and they're going to also die by their sword. And that's the...
Their own fear that they need to live off of, their own control aspects are no longer there.
Yeah.
So they're pretty much grappling like someone in an ocean who can't swim, grappling at whatever's next to them. Because they're sinking.
Yeah.
They're consuming each other. You see that on a daily level, on a daily basis. They are consuming each other through their game of money, et cetera. They're literally attacking each other and killing one another, in a sense.
Yeah.
And you know what? I don't believe that if a god or a goddess makes a correction, that they do it half-assed.
That's right. Yeah, it's not, well, maybe, no, none of that.
No, no.
Wouldn't surprise me, dude.
Exactly, Bob. I couldn't concur with you more. It's going to be done properly, and with, just before, we've got, how long have we got? 12 minutes. At least I'll give you the last 10 minutes. Is that okay?
I don't need that long.
Okay. All right. But all I want to say is, and I just forgot what I'm going to say, so I'm going to let you go. I'm going to let you go for it.
I thought you were going to give me a minute, so I put a chip in my mouth.
Oh, okay. Okay. We'll wait for the chip. I had something really fantastic to say, but that'll have to wait. So next week. Okay, next week. Next week. We are tri-weekly, so on Friday's show, it's going to be about archontic experiences. So now that, and especially people who are listening to the archive show, this show, I would sincerely recommend you, if you had and know what the and realized what the archons are capable of, and you've had an archontic experience, I would, or you know friends who have had our contact experiences. We would love to hear from you. Please get in contact with your friends and put the word out so we can get people on the show to so we can look at the experiences for what they are. I know Octavia's bursting at the seams. She has a multitude of experiences.
Can you give an example of a contact experience so people have a framework or a reference of what you're talking about?
Well, I'm going to get Oki on to do that. So I'm going to put her on the spot. She wants to be quiet. So put your mic on.
No, we've got to keep them waiting until Friday, David.
Yes.
No, just a little bit.
Just one experience, so people have got a frame of reference.
Well, okay, I'll give you an insight into the beginning of it. And that was when I first met David, actually. One of the things I said to him, subconsciously or consciously, was, rip the sucker out of me. And I wasn't even sure what I was saying. Now, there's certain experiences that led to that, and I experienced a traumatic experience when I was younger, when I was kidnapped by a serial killer. So I was really in touch with this psychopathic energy. Anyway, I'll go into that more next time. So what happened in the process of David basically deconstructing me, we realized that there was this entity or archontic fed entity that was basically had manifested in my physical body. So there was a whole process of work with David to actually bring that out. And it was very intense, very, very intense. And the outcome was quite amazing because I actually felt the entity, the being, come outside of my etheric body, and I described it to David, and he made me aware of what was actually going on. So, yeah, that's a little bit of an insight. Yeah. Well, yeah, and that's right. You know, the whole experience came together because I had connected with my twin flame, and he actually saw that within me as well. So through our love, through intense lovemaking, we actually got to the core and to the source of what was actually going on.
Which goes back to what John was saying about the healing process being between
the lovers.
The lovers.
Yeah.
We can't hear you, David.
Oh, he's mute. You're muted. Yeah, it looked like it was probably more like a grey alien, and it really spun me out when it came outside of me. But then I knew I'd got to the other end of it. So, you know, we enticed it. We did all this sort of work to get to it, but it was definitely in a sacred. We created a sacred space for this to all come about. Yeah. Any more thoughts on that, Dave?
No, I'll let that sink into our little collective imagination here.
So that was one. So it's all, it all kind of, the whole scenario worked up to that moment. So, and through that moment, I could actually clear a lot of past psychopathic influence that was actually, that I felt that had overwhelmed me and had come inside me, because I felt that through some intense moments that I actually became a psychopath in order to save my life. And not in entirety, but I had to meet it on some level to save my life. So
it was that initial interaction with that serial killer psychopath.
Well,
somehow, or were you already open to that? Because you know how they talk about pedophiles and psychopaths, they can see their victims a mile away, that their victims, they choose them based on, often they describe it as an energetic understanding.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that led me back to, I had abuse in my childhood. So a part of my meeting with my serial killer was normal, that I'd almost convinced myself that that was a part of life. And that was that archontic information that was being fed to me, that this was okay. So it was quite, it's been a journey.
Mm. It's been a journey.
So don't forget to mention also that it was there was another girl with her who basically fell apart. And it was Octavia who convinced the serial killer, or she didn't even have to convince him, because she actually thought that it was normal that the serial killer basically just let her go and let both of them go. So it was that he needed, and don't forget, we have to understand that the victim falls in love with the predator. There's a really strange relationship that happens there. And it was, you know, my history is my father was a pedophile and still is. You know, he abandoned us when we were very young. Four of us. There was we were one, 3 months, 1, 2, and 3, and put us into state homes, run Catholic orphanages, and we were basically at the mercy of of the Catholic Church and the Catholic protocol. And that was very predatorial at that time. So, and then, my father would come back and get us out, one by one, there was four of us. So every month it was my turn. And what I feel that what people need to realize that, you know, to have these experiences is you bind that. And then in that experience, it can either destroy you or you can destroy it. There's a pivotal conjuncture. There's a pivotal point of where you take control of that experience and realize that you are there. You are here, not there. You are here to break that line of abuse within your hereditary line. And my father was sodomized by groups of Catholic priests in India, in Catholic church, Catholic college, just outside of New Delhi. And he was a broken man when he came to Australia. So, it's that level of abuse. My father, not necessarily would sexually abuse me. He would, but not as bad as my brother. But he would beat me, and it was like he didn't have an off button. He just didn't know when to stop. So, it got to the stage where I just basically dealt with the beatings and just looked at him while he was doing it. And then he'd start picking up, heavier objects and things like that. But, when you get to a certain knowing within your psyche that, this physical pain, and this is what I think Gregory is alluding to, is that the physical body, he wants to know about the body. How the body is playing a part in this correction is, we have everything is processional, everything's a process, and through that experience, in this fear culture, in this fear paradigm that we've lived in for the last 2,000 years, we've had and Brian, that, and Kevin, our lovely friend Kevin, who's normally on but is just sort of having a sabbatical at the moment, Bob, yourself, Bevan, yourself, everybody, we've all had some sort of, intense trauma. And what we were saying before in Wednesday's show about the origins of fear is that this this trauma creates and almost creates a deconstruction within within your main persona, the persona that you've been given to ride with here on this planet, and everything else is basically an add-on. It's like Firefox, you get your add-ons. You can do with it what you want. I mean, it's a perfect metaphor. And if you choose to, to have an abusive add-on and manifest it and give it energy when it really isn't yours, it's somebody else's, they're afflicting their energy. But let's take the emotional content out of it. Is it someone saying to you, I am afflicted with this, can you help me? And we know that a pedophile, that this is the abuse, sexual abuse of children is the only way they know how to show love, because that's what's happened to them. So, we've been through this huge deconstruction, my family. And anyway, we'll get into that next show. It'll be an interesting show. So, and I won't go too far into it. But we've got 1 minute 40 seconds to go. Lisa, did you want to say anything? I think we'll
leave it till next week.
Yeah, I think we've got a really beautiful event that we're going to create, ladies and gentlemen, in conjunction with LisaMHarrison.com and projected into our little collective consciousness and hope it goes further than we can ever imagine. And this is what Linda Blackwood was saying. You know, we need a vision. We need something to anchor. We need an anchoring point, and we are going to create this, and we are going to define the technology of the collective imagination. We are going, and I'm not saying collective as in everybody. I'm saying the collective imagination that are connected to us, because that's our laboratory. That's the only way we can really, as John is writing and documenting and logging the whole correction, so will we log our perception and our understanding of the collective imagination and bring it back into public record that it was taken out. So we've got 20 seconds. So, guys, did you just want to say goodbye to everyone? And I'd say goodbye and thank you very much. It was a fantastic show and love you all. And thank you.
Yeah, thank you, David. It was an awesome show.
Yep.
Okay.
Thank you.
It was great.
Yep.
Stay safe, guys.
So stay sacred, everybody, and see you on Friday, 8 to 10.
Sorry for not speaking anytime.
Be quiet, Tommy. You talk too much.
Yeah. Missed you, Tommy.
Thank you, bro.
Yeah.